as in times find it surprising. The house stood on a slight rise at the end of a driveway that stretched for more than 20 kilometres. The homestead glowed like an oasis as the red desert gave way to a lush lawn and well-tended garden kept green by bore water. The house itself, with its sweeping veranda, looked plucked from a country street in a time when homes were still generous and sprawling. The large industrial sheds dotted around spoiled the illusion a little, as did the staff accommodation cabins. They looked deserted to Nathan's eye, but a caravan he hadn't seen before was parked in the yard beside a dusty four-wheel drive. As he drove up to the house, he kept his eyes peeled for signs of decay or disrepair. He could see none. The house, like the property and the well-fed cattle they'd passed on the journey, appeared to be doing well. Better than Nathan's own place at any rate, he couldn't help thinking as he parked next to Bub. Strings of tinsel and Christmas lights had been wound along the veranda. They had been put up with care, but already looked tatty as they flapped in the hot wind. Harry was waiting, leaning on the wooden railings. He straightened as the three of them got out of the cars. Harry had skin like a leather bag and an expression that barely changed, making it hard to guess what he was thinking. Ballamara born and bred, he had started working on stations at an age when he should have still been in school. He had come to Burley Downs before Nathan was born and he was still there after Nathan had left. "Good to see you both," Harry said, shaking Nathan's hand and giving Xander a gentle slap on the shoulder. Bub was engulfed in a slobbery reunion with his dog. Nathan saw Cameron's cattle dog Duffy hanging back and watching the empty road. He reached out a hand and she came to him reluctantly. Strains of music floated from somewhere in the house as a recorded voice sang about snow and sleigh bells, coming from his niece's rooms, Nathan guessed. It had been a year since he had seen Cameron's daughters and he wondered how they would cope with the news about their dad. The festive music sounded strangely grotesque, but the girls were only 8 and 5, he thought. Whatever helped. The front door opened and Nathan felt a jolt of horror at the sight of his mother. Her cheeks were pale and sunken beneath bloodshot eyes, and her shoulders were hunched as though it was taking all her efforts simply to be upright. "I thought you were trying to sleep," Harry said. Liz Bright didn't bother answering as she blinked into the light through slitted, swollen lids. Nathan could see fresh tears forming as she looked at them. Neither he nor Bub was the son she wanted to see, Nathan knew, then immediately felt guilty for thinking it. Liz had always tried hard not to play favourites, but Cameron's ready smile, quick mind and well-run property hadn't made it easy. Bub, unshaven and dust-streaked, was rubbing his eye with a dirty finger. Nathan knew he looked no better. Liz brightened a touch at the sight of Xander, and she pulled him close, holding him fiercely. When she let him go, she reached up and put her arms around Nathan too. He hugged her back. The movement had the rusty edge of underuse. Liz took a deep breath.
"Tell me."
"Maybe we should go inside," Harry started, but she cut him off.
"No, the girls are inside. Tell me here."
Nathan found himself once again wishing that Cameron were there. He would handle this properly. Bub, who was crouched down whispering to his dog, offered no help.
"It was quite strange," Nathan started, then stopped.
He tried again, doing his best to explain as Liz began to pace up and down the veranda. She only went a short way, as though torn between wanting to hear but unable to bear it.
"We're not sure," he found himself repeating. "I don't know."
"His car worked,"
Bub interjected at one point, sending Liz shuffling to the far end of the floorboards.
"We tried it."
"Not bogged,"
Harry said, looking from one brother to the other.
"No flats?"
They shook their heads.
"Any idea what Cam was doing out there?" Nathan asked. "Didn't mention any work in that area," Harry said. "He wrote in the book that he was going to Lehman's Hill."
"Bub said he seemed a bit stressed lately," Nathan said. He saw Harry glance at Liz and wondered if he was reluctant to talk in front of their mum. Harry nodded.
"I reckon that's fair to say, yeah."
"How bad was it?"
"Hard to tell."
Harry's face moved a fraction. It was still impossible to read.
"Hadn't been himself for a few weeks looking back. Maybe a month, would you say?"
He looked to Liz, who gave a tight nod, staring past the lush garden to the barren brown land beyond.
It didn't seem like anything too serious, though, Harry went on. Obviously, or we would have done something.
What do you mean by not himself? Nathan said.
Didn't have his eye on the ball around here as much as usual, but nothing we couldn't handle. He said he was tired a few times. I got the idea he maybe hadn't been sleeping that well.
He hadn't, Liz said quietly. I heard him sometimes in the night.
And he was touchy, Harry said. Sometimes looked a bit rough around the edges.
No, that definitely didn't sound like Cameron, Nathan thought.
Had something happened? He asked. You been having any problems here?
Harry shook his head.
Property's been good. Going well. We've had a strong year.
Great. Good to hear, said Nathan. His own bottom line had once again been written in red rather than black. The children's decorations shimmered in the wind and he thought of his nieces. Does Sophie and Lo know yet?
Ilse's in there telling them now, Harry said.
And Nathan automatically glanced towards the door. It was empty. He missed what Harry was saying.
Sorry? Glenn called.
Oh, the regular sergeant. He's back in town, is he?
Not yet. He wants someone to meet him at Cam's car tomorrow.
Nathan could feel Cameron's keys in his pocket.
I'll go. I already told him I would, Harry said. Still, I'll come with you.
Me too, said Xander and Bub, almost in unison. Liz, who had been staring at nothing, dragged her eyes back and frowned.
Bub, take Xander inside and show him where he's sleeping.
He knows, same as always, Bub said.
She closed her eyes and took a breath.
Take him anyway.
When the screen door slammed behind them, she turned to Nathan. How's Xander coping?
Okay, considering.
How long have you got him for?
He's getting the plane on the 27th.
Oh. She looked disappointed. Can't get the next week's flight? I thought it was your turn for New Year.
It is. But no. Xander would be leaving a week before the court-ordered date. Nathan could have insisted it was his legal right secured and well and truly paid for, but he hadn't.
He wants to go to a party in Brisbane with his mates.
How long until he's back again?
I don't know. Nathan tried to keep his voice light but could feel Liz watching him. He's got some big exams starting this year.
2 years of revision schedules and standardised testing and university entrance marks lay ahead, Nathan had been warned via his ex-wife's lawyer. Xander would need focus and stability for these 2 years. He needed time at home to study. Could Nathan please acknowledge that he understood that? In fact, Nathan could understand that. He could also understand that in less than 2 years' time, his son would be 18 years old. Court-ordered visitations would be among the many relics of Xander's childhood left behind at that juncture. The Christmas carols had stopped, Nathan realised, and in the vacuum he could hear a child crying. He wished the music would start again. Liz turned towards the sound and, without a word, walked to the door and disappeared inside. Nathan and Harry were alone on the veranda. In the west, the sun was a burning yellow blaze as it crept lower.
Between us, Nathan said, have you ever seen anything like this?
I've seen tourists do some bloody stupid things, Harry said. But I knew Cam hadn't just broken down soon as I heard. If that had happened, he'd still be in that car with the aircon on complaining all about it on the radio. Everyone knows that. When Ilse broke down earlier this year, she did the right thing. Sat tight in her car on the North Road for 4 hours until Cam could get to her.
That's what I told the St. Helens cop, Nathan said.
And what does he reckon?
He doesn't know anything. He wasn't even trained there.
But he thinks Cam walked away on purpose.
I think so, Nathan said.
You saw Cam most recently, though. You tell me. I can tell you there are easier ways to do it, but...
A long pause.
People have done some strange things round here over the years.
You'd just shoot yourself, wouldn't you?
Harry's eyes flicked over.
Would you?
Well, I would.
Nathan had meant to sound factual, but it came out wrong. Too definitive. It implied a level of thought had gone into it. Harry was still looking at him closely now, and neither spoke again for a while. The crying inside the house had stopped, audibly at least. The Christmas carols had not restarted, though. No tidings of comfort and joy here. "What do you think was worrying Cam?" Nathan said eventually.
"I don't know. Like I said, we've had a good season. If it was something work-related, it's news to me."
Harry leaned heavily against the railing.
"I suppose he turned 40 this year."
"Did that bother him?"
"Never mentioned it, but it's a milestone, isn't it? Bothers some people."
Nathan tried to think back to his own milestone birthday 2 years earlier. Other than a card from Xander and a phone call from Liz, it had passed as a completely unremarkable day. Above him, the decorations fluttered, shedding dust to the wind.
"Kerry McGrath killed himself around Christmas," Harry said.
"I suppose."
Although that was different, Nathan thought. Kerry had swallowed every pill in his flying doctor supply box after his wife left him.
He'd opened the compartments you weren't supposed to open without explicit instructions from the doc on the other end of the phone, and he'd taken everything from paracetamol to morphine in one go. It had been neither quick nor painless, apparently. At least that was what Steve Fitzgerald at the clinic had told everyone. Probably as a deterrent as much as anything, Nathan suspected. He remembered hearing about Kerry. Nathan's own box was now at the back of a high cupboard out of sight. He cleared his throat. "It was Brian Taylor. He wandered off." Harry made a noise.
"He wandered from the pub to his car and drowned drunk in the river. Speaking of, you all set for supplies down at your place?"
"Yeah, mostly."
"Well, make sure you are. I reckon the water's coming."
"Again?"
"Think so. There'll be rain up north, I reckon."
Nathan nodded. When Harry made a prediction, it was worth paying attention.
"There was also your dad,"
Harry said out of nowhere, and Nathan looked over in surprise.
"That was around this time of year."
"February. And he didn't kill himself."
"I know."
Harry was thoughtful.
"Just wondered if something might have been going through Cameron's head out there on his own. Maybe it triggered something."
"Dad wasn't on his own when he died."
"No, I know that. I meant..."
"What?"
"Nothing. Sometimes people do strange things."
They were cut off by the squeal of the screen door. Xander looked out. "Grandma says dinner's ready."
"Thanks, mate,"
Harry said as Xander disappeared back inside.
"You coming?"
"In a sec, you go." Nathan waited until he heard the door slam and he was alone. He walked down the wooden steps and across the springy green lawn, a tangy citrus scent coming from the trees. From the direction of the big shed, he could hear the hum of the generator turning itself over to keep the property lights burning. He reached the fence designed to keep curious cattle off the lush lawn, and without quite knowing why, climbed over it and stood on the other side. Nathan looked out. The sun seemed to be dropping fast in the west. In another hour, the horizon would disappear into something even more endless. He heard a distant, wistful howl. It was early in the evening for dingoes, but there was nothing else it could be. Nathan took a couple of steps through the dust, away from the fence and the house and its cultivated greenery. He stared out. It was vast, like looking down from the edge of a cliff, and he felt a rare hint of vertigo. At night, when the sky felt even bigger, he could almost imagine it was a million years ago and he was walking on the bottom of the sea. A million years ago, when a million natural events still needed to occur one after the other to form this land as it lay in front of him now. A place where rivers flooded without rain and seashells fossilized 1,000 miles from water, and men who left their cars found themselves walking to their deaths. Sometimes, the space almost seemed to call to Nathan, like a faint heartbeat, insistent and persuasive. He listened now, and took an experimental step. Then another. Behind him, he heard the squeal of the screen door. Xander calling out.
"Dad!"
Nathan stopped walking. He raised a hand, then turned towards the sound of his son's voice, and slowly made his way back to the house. Chapter 6. The exhaustion didn't hit Nathan properly until he was back inside. Xander had gone ahead into the kitchen and Nathan lingered in the dim hallway feeling hollow. He was used to starting his days in the early morning dark, but the last few hours had drained him. There was a jolt at his elbow as Bub pushed past and disappeared into the kitchen. Bub looked just as tired. Cameron's dog, Duffy, wandered up to him, still looking forlorn. She had come from the same litter as Nathan's own dog, Kelly, and now nuzzled his leg in the same way that Kelly once had. Nathan crouched down to Duffy and was immediately reminded of that bad morning last year. He'd woken up and known straight away that something was wrong. He'd eventually found Kelly hiding in one of the sheds, her eyes rolling around in her head, whining in pain. Nathan, who spent more time with that dog than any other living thing, had taken her in his arms and carried her to the house. She had died on the way. She'd been baited, Nathan had told Glenn when he'd calmed down enough to call the police station. His voice had cracked, and he hadn't cared. Someone had come out to Nathan's place and poisoned her. To the sergeant's credit, he'd driven out to Nathan's property and helped him look for signs. They'd found nothing. It must have been targeted, Nathan had insisted. I know what a baited dog looks like. Someone got her on purpose. Glenn had been sympathetic but sceptical. I've had no other reports. It's a fair way for someone to come to do that. You don't think they would, to get at me. Glenn had put a hand on his shoulder. I'm not saying they wouldn't, mate. I'm just not sure if they actually did. Nathan paused now in the dim hallway, one hand on Duffy's head, as he heard a whisper coming from around the corner. But they'll have to come. A woman. He didn't recognise the voice. No, I don't think so. I'm telling you, it's not that kind of place. He was on the phone asking if anyone was coming here. A man this time, also whispering. Here, to the house. Yeah, but I think the cop was saying no. The voices stopped abruptly as their owners rounded the corner and saw Nathan standing there in the hall. The man's jaw was still open with a half-formed word unspoken. He appeared to be in his late 20s, as was the woman next to him, and judging by their accents, they were English. Nathan felt fractious. That was all he bloody needed. A pair of pommy backpackers. God, she gave me a fright. The man recovered first. You must be Nathan. Yeah. Who were you talking about? Who? The person you heard on the phone talking to the police. Oh! The man hesitated, glancing past Nathan to the empty kitchen door. It was Harry. Sorry, I wasn't listening. I just heard. Right. It was hard to see the pair properly in the low light. Who'd you say you were again? Simon and Katie. The man pointed as he said their names, as though Nathan might need help working out who was who. We're no one. You must be someone if you're hanging around my dead brother's hallway listening in on phone calls. It was unnecessary, and Nathan knew it. He just couldn't help it. The woman found her voice. Cameron hired us. Yeah, Bub said. To do what? Help your mum around the house for one thing, she said, nodding towards the kitchen. So if it's all right with you... She'd stepped around Nathan before he could answer, and he found himself trailing them into the kitchen. Harry and Bub were already seated at the large wooden table. Nathan pulled up a chair next to Xander and looked across at the English bloke. Simon, was it? He had pale eyes and a very straight nose and thick dark hair that shone in a way that seemed strangely unnatural. Nathan would have had trouble tearing his eyes away from it if it hadn't been for the girl. Katie was... and Nathan could think of no other word, a stunner. In the brightly lit kitchen, He could see how her skin and hair shone and her T-shirt clung to her in all the right ways. As she smiled at something, a hint of a dimple appeared. She brushed behind Nathan and he had the overwhelming urge to reach out and take her hand. He frowned and put his palms on the table. Bub was watching with a look of slavish devotion as Katie moved from benchtop to table, carrying plates of beef and rice. Even Xander was introducing himself with an enthusiasm Nathan hadn't seen before and a glaze in his eyes that made him look a little like Bub. Only Harry seemed unmoved, his stony expression unaltered. Katie bent over to get something from a low drawer, and Nathan wondered what Cameron's wife made of her. "We're not waiting for Ilsa?" he asked Liz, who was hovering in front of the open fridge door as though unable to remember why she was there.
"She's still with the girls," Harry answered instead. "She said to start."
"Oh." Katie set the final plate down. "One for you, Bob."
"Thank you, Katie."
"It's Bub," Nathan said automatically.
"Sorry?"
"Just," he could feel Bub glaring at him.
"With your accent, it sounds like you're saying Bob."
"I am."
"It's Bub,
because he's the baby."
"Oh."
Katie's brow creased. She looked at Bub, who was shoveling food into his 30-year-old mouth.
"I'm so sorry."
"I don't mind,"
said Bub, with feeling.
"That's so embarrassing."
Katie gave an awkward laugh.
"I've been calling you the wrong name this whole time."
"Well, his real name's Lee," Liz said with a sigh. She had finally shut the fridge and sat down.
"So you're not the only one."
Bub gave Katie a smile that made her glance away, then turned to Harry.
"What did Glenn have to say about meeting tomorrow?"
Harry's eyes flicked towards Liz.
"Not now, mate."
"I'm only asking."
Bub had changed his clothes, Nathan realised. He looked down at himself and across at Xander. The red dust from the death side had crept into the creases of their shirts, and the colour suddenly made his skin crawl. He rubbed at another red patch on his jeans that made his hands feel gritty. "I'll put the washing machine on later," Liz said quietly, and Nathan realised she was looking at the dust as well. "Thanks." No one spoke, and for a while the only sound was cutlery against plates. After a few minutes, Xander turned to the backpackers, as Nathan had known he would. The kid lived in a city. He couldn't cope with quiet like the rest of them.
"How long have you been out here travelling?"
Xander asked Simon, who also seemed relieved to have the silence broken.
"Nearly a year."
"You're not heading home for Christmas?"
"No plans,"
Simon started, as at the same time Katie said,
"It's too expensive."
Their eyes met, and something passed between them that Nathan couldn't read.
"And Cam hired you," Nathan said, and they looked over. "Was that pre-arranged or..."
"No, just lucky."
Simon swallowed and put his fork down.
"We were in the pub in town and got talking to him. I've worked in a few trades at home, so I've been helping fix the fences, water balls, whatever."
Harry's features moved a hair's breadth, and Nathan wondered how much help the new guy had actually been. Simon nodded at Katie.
"And she's a teacher, so it worked out well with the girls here, doing their School of the Air lessons with them."
Katie gave a small smile. She had put down a knife and was picking at her thumbnail.
"Do you like it out here?"
Xander asked.
"Love it,"
Simon said. Katie didn't reply.
"Must be a fair change of pace for you,"
Nathan said.
"That's kind of the point," Simon said, and Nathan had a vague sense he was being patronised.
"You don't get anything like this at home.
We were blown away by how big these stations actually are when we first came out. We passed through one in WA which was half the size of Wales."
"Oh," Nathan had no idea how big Wales was, but it didn't surprise him.
"So you've worked at other stations?"
"Yeah, a couple."
"Where?"
"Out west mostly."
"Yeah, you said West is a bloody big place.
I don't think you would have heard of it."
"Try me.
Armistead."
Nathan hadn't heard of it, much to his irritation.
"Where's that exactly?"
"Kind of east of Perth."
"Everything's bloody east."
Liz dropped her fork on her plate with a clatter.
"Jesus, Nathan."
"Why don't you let him eat in peace, mate?"
Harry said. No, it's my fault, Simon said. It's a crap description, I know, but it's so hard out here, there's nothing to help pinpoint things.
That was only true, Nathan thought, if you were completely blind to the subtleties of the land. Across the table, Xander swallowed his mouthful.
What brought you over to Queensland?
Simon had taken a sip of water and took his time swallowing.
Weather.
Really?
Too bloody hot in WA.
You know, this is officially the hottest part of Australia.
Oh,
I didn't actually. Still, better than the freezing fog at home, isn't it? Simon looked to Katie, who blinked distracted.
Sorry, what?
She'd been staring at something unseen out of the window. The sky was dusky as evening drew in.
I was saying...
He was interrupted by the landline jangling loudly from the hall. Word must be spreading, Nathan thought.
I'll get it.
Harry started to stand, but Liz was already gone, leaving her plate practically untouched. Harry looked at the empty doorway for a moment, then shook his head.
We're so sorry about Cameron, Simon said, to no one in particular.
Katie was picking her nails again.
He was a great guy. When we were in town looking for work, we heard a lot of nice things about him, and people were right. They all said we'd be lucky to work for him.
That was probably true, Nathan thought. Cameron had a reputation for being a good boss.
I hadn't actually realised at first that you still live so close to town yourself, Nathan,
Simon was saying. Not that close, nearly 3 hours away.
Yeah, relatively speaking, though. I'd got the impression you'd move further away.
Nope. Katie had looked up now as well, and both she and Simon were watching Nathan with curiosity. He wondered what else people had been saying in town while they were singing Cam's praises. Although he didn't need to wonder, really. He could guess. The atmosphere had grown awkward, but Nathan did nothing to displace it. He simply stared back impassive until Simon dropped his eyes. The backpacker turned to Xander.
You live with your dad?
No. Xander said. I go to school in Brisbane. The eternal diplomat, Nathan thought, with a rush of something both sharp and sweet. 7 words that glossed over a decade-long tug of war between him, his ex-wife Jackie, and now her new husband as well. Fractious phone calls, lawyers' letters, court orders, visitation schedules, and always, always the legal bills. Xander flashed a half-smile at Nathan, as though he knew what he was thinking.
Will you go into property management as well, do you think?
Simon asked.
Oh, nah, I don't think so. It's not really...
Xander saw Nathan, Bub and Harry all watching him and he hesitated.
I want to go to uni. I'm not too sure after that.
He looked a little embarrassed but was saved by movement at the kitchen door. They all looked up. In the doorway stood Cameron's wife, turned freshly made widow. Ilsa had one hand on the door jamb and an unsteady air about her. Her light brown hair was unbrushed and had been pulled back hastily with an elastic band. Her face was flushed and shiny and it was clear she'd been crying. Nathan didn't sit up in his chair. He didn't straighten his shoulders or run a hand through his hair or neaten his shirt. The urge was so instinctive, he found it a little uncomfortable to resist, like holding his breath. But still, he didn't move. He just sat there, pushing back against involuntary reactions. Eventually, he counted to 3 and allowed himself to raise his eyes and glance at Ilsa, just once. She wasn't even looking at him. Chapter 7. Ilsa hovered in the doorway, looking very much like she wanted to turn and leave.
Come and sit down.
Harry beckoned to her and she took a few steps in.
Are the girls coming?
They're asleep. Lo's in Liz's room. She wouldn't settle in her own.
Katie stood up.
I'll get you something to eat. It's fine. I'm not...
Ilsa started, but Katie had already placed a plate in front of the remaining vacant spot next to Nathan. The hesitation was so brief, Nathan could almost tell himself he imagined it. Then he felt the cotton of Ilsa's shirt brush against his arm and heard the soft creak of the chair as she sat down beside him.
Nice to see you, Nathan.
You too.
He could still remember the first time he'd seen Ilse standing in this kitchen. It was 9 years ago, and only the fifth time he'd seen her at all. He had walked in and seen someone standing alone at the sink refilling a water jug. Nathan had registered her dress, her light brown hair, and the curve of her back before he fully realised who he was looking at. She had turned, and they'd both stopped and stood there wordlessly, each as surprised as the other. Nathan had taken a breath to say, "What?" To this day he didn't know. When Cameron had swept into the room and up to Ilse. He'd put his palm against the small of her back and gently moved a stray strand of hair before kissing her cheek. Nathan had made his lungs release the air and, with effort, shut his mouth. Later, Ilse had caught him alone in the hall. "I didn't expect to see you here," she'd said. "No shit," he'd thought. "Same here." "Well, Cameron's my brother," he said out loud. "I didn't know that when I met him. I'm sorry." But she hadn't looked sorry. She'd looked happy. Ilse did not look happy now. "How are the girls, Ilse?" Harry asked.
"Confused, full of questions, same as everyone. I have no idea how to explain it to them."
Her voice was tight, and she looked across at Bub, who was busy clearing his plate.
"You were about their age when your dad died."
Bub's fork slowed.
"I suppose."
"Did anyone say anything that helped you understand what was going on?"
It was a sign of Ilse's desperation that she was even asking, Nathan thought. Bub started eating again.
"Dunno," he said, still chewing. "Not really, I was okay."
That wasn't even close to true, Nathan knew. Nathan had been barely 21 when their dad died, with Cameron 2 years behind. But Bub had only been 8, and there had been nightmares. Nathan had seen and heard them for himself when he'd come home, the whole house waking up to the sound of shrieks. Bub's face shiny with sweat and tears, saying that Dad was alive, but now bloodied and furious at what had happened to him. The nightmares had lasted for years, apparently. Nathan wasn't sure exactly how long. There were plenty of things worse than bad dreams, but Bub had not been okay, not at all.
"Did anyone actually talk to Uncle Cam before he left on Wednesday?"
Xander looked around the table. Harry pointed his fork at Simon.
"We'd both already gone, but..."
He gestured at Katie, who nodded.
"I saw him, briefly. The girls know we're playing in the schoolroom. It's in that cabin near the stables," she said. "I went to get something from the house and saw Cameron heading to his car."
"Did he say anything?"
Nathan asked.
"Only that he was on his way to meet Bub, at Lehman's Hill. I asked if they were both still planning to stay out overnight, so I didn't need to worry about them for dinner. He said yes, and they would be back the next day."
"And how did he seem?" Nathan asked.
"I didn't really know him that well."
"You can say what you think, though."
She was still picking at her nails. Simon noticed and put his hand on hers.
"Honestly," Katie said finally, "he seemed quite agitated, and he was keen to get going, like he had something to do and he wanted to get out of the way. I assumed it was the Lehman's Hill trip, though."
"Did he say he didn't want to go?"
"No, nothing like that. Not to me, at least. He got in his car and headed off, and that's when..."
Katie looked over at Ilse, attempting to pass the narrative along. Ilse, who was sitting very still, did not take it up. Nathan turned to her.
"You saw Cam too?"
"Yes," she said at last.
"I was further along the driveway bringing in one of the horses. He had to go past me to leave."
"Did he stop and talk?"
Bub said. He'd stopped eating and started paying attention since Lehman's Hill was mentioned, Nathan realised.
"Of course he did, he's my husband,"
Ilse snapped.
She took a breath. "Sorry, Bub."
"No worries. What did he say?"
Ilse's face tightened. Nathan could understand she might be reluctant to share her final personal exchange with her husband with the group, but he was as keen to know as anybody.
"He said he would see me when he got back."
"That's it,"
Bub said. What'd you say?
To drive safe and I would see him then.
Ah. Bub looked disappointed, and Ilse's eyes were suddenly hard and shiny.
Well, I'm sorry, but what did you expect? I didn't know.
She fished a tissue out of her pocket and blew her nose. Nathan turned to Bub. And Cam definitely told you he was going to meet you at Lehman's?
Yeah, we spoke the day before on the radio.
But not on the Wednesday morning.
No, no need, mate. I knew what we were doing.
Harry was watching Bub. How did he sound when you spoke?
I already said he seemed fine.
Seeming fine isn't the same as being fine. The voice came from the door and they all looked up to see Liz. She had been crying again. Nathan wondered how long she'd been standing there. She was still looking at Bub in mild despair, but he just shrugged, like he couldn't see the distinction in what she'd said.
Did you see Uncle Cam before he left, Grandma?
Xander said.
No.
The weight of regret seemed to make the air in the room grow heavier.
But it was obvious something was wrong with him.
Nathan saw Ilse's expression harden.
Where were you? Out riding?
Nathan said, and was relieved when Liz nodded. His mum rode almost every morning of her life. Nathan privately used it as a bellwether for her health and knew Cameron had too. He looked pointedly at the table where her plate was still waiting, but Liz shook her head.
No, I'm going to bed.
Who was on the phone?
Harry asked.
Caroline, from the post office.
Word's hit town then?
Yes, sounds like it.
What'd she want?
Same as everyone else. She said she wanted to help.
Liz shook her head.
But all they really want to know is what happened.
Liz looked around the kitchen as though the answer might materialise, but Nathan could see only baffled faces staring back. What are you telling them? He said finally.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell them.
Her face creased.
I have to try to sleep. I'll see you all in the morning.
She was gone, and the doorway was empty once more. After a moment, Katie stood up and started stacking the dishes.
What were you and Simon doing, Uncle Harry?
Xander asked.
Checking a few of the northeastern boars.
Thanks, Katie. Harry passed his plate over.
We were gone before dawn, so we missed camp completely.
Big area, Nathan said. You get them all done, or do you need some help?
I think we're mostly right, Harry said. I did the eastern side and Simon did the north.
Splitting up was the way to do it, Nathan thought. They'd cover an extra 100 kilometres that way, even if it meant working alone. They probably hadn't seen each other all day. He looked from Simon to Harry and wondered why the thought had occurred to him. Bub drained his water glass.
Bloody weird camp being out there at the grave. It's a bit like that story about the real Stockman.
Bub, mate, for God's sake.
Harry made a noise in his throat. Simon frowned and looked over at Bub.
What's that?
Harry shook his head.
That's ridiculous.
It's not.
Bub nodded at Nathan.
Go on, you tell it. You know how it goes. The one with the campfire and the travellers.
No,
Nathan said.
But you know the one I mean with the horses.
Yeah, I know.
He felt Ilse shift in her chair, but not now.
How does it start again? There was this group of blokes or something.
Bub groaned. Oh, I can never remember it properly. Just bloody do it now. Go on, or I'll have to.
The room was quiet, and the backpackers were watching expectantly. Nathan sighed.
It's just this stupid legend they tell kids around here, he said.
Supposed to have happened back in the 1890s, and the stockman wasn't actually a stockman, he was a cattle rustler. Katie had turned off the water in the sink and was paying attention. He was part of a gang, Nathan went on. They saw all this space and all the absent property owners back then and saw the chance to make a few bucks. It was nothing too flash, pretty much keeping off the main tracks and rounding up any loose cattle that came their way. When they had as many as they could handle, they'd walk them down to Adelaide, disguise the branding if they could, sell them cheap if they couldn't. He stopped.
Then one day the horses went nuts,
Bub prompted.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Nathan frowned. So yeah, one day they're up in these parts and they all start having trouble with the horse. It's skittish, you know, difficult to control, like they were spooked. So the stockman's horse is the worst and it gets to the point where he can barely keep up. So he calls it a day and stays behind to set up the group camp while the others get the cattle sorted for the night. Nathan paused. The story goes that he was alone for no more than an hour. When they got back, his swag was rolled out and a campfire had been lit. The kettle was strung over, but had boiled itself dry. Bub jumped in. He lowered his voice meaningfully. But there was no sign of the stockman. The backpackers looked back to Nathan, who shrugged. Like Bub says, no sign of the bloke, no sign of a struggle. His horse was still tied up, but barely. She was pulling and thrashing like they do when they want to run. So his mates split up, ride around, can't find him. They search until dark, but nothing. They wait the next day, but he never comes back. And eventually they have to move on because they've got all these cattle still. Anyway, 2 days later, they run into this family of travellers coming north up the track and ask if they've seen any sign of their mate. The family seems a bit uneasy and takes them round to look in one of their carts. In the back, all wrapped up in a blanket, is the body of the stockman. The family reckons they found him dead by the side of the track 3 days earlier and 100 kilometres further south. They were taking him to the nearest town to see if anyone knew who he was. Apparently, his body was lying by the side of the road. No injuries, no water or supplies or anything with him. But if they were telling the truth, he was found dead the same day he disappeared. Bub leaned back in his chair. And too far away for him to walk or even ride. So how did he get there? Simon glanced up at Katie, who held out her rubber-gloved hands and shrugged. Simon shook his head. I don't know. No, well, none of those guys knew either, Nathan said. So they panicked a bit, buried him right there where they were, and that would have been the end of it. But there's always talk, and suddenly there were all these sightings of the dead stockman up and down the track, people claiming they'd seen him walking at night and things. Eventually workers started refusing to come here, saying it was haunted. There were a few accidents, serious ones, a couple of people died. Anyway, it got so bad that eventually the landowner here at the time was forced to put the headstone up, to try to lay the whole ghost thing to rest and put a stop to the rumours. Didn't really work, though. The story goes that if you dig, there's nothing under that headstone, that the grave is empty. The only sound was the kitchen clock ticking. Both the backpackers were staring at Nathan. Bullshit, Simon whispered. Hey, of course, Nathan said. It's only a bloody story. Still, that's quite weird, him vanishing and appearing like that miles away. Yeah, well, don't lose any sleep. It's not true, Nathan started to say. But his words were lost as Ilsa stood up suddenly, her chair scraping against the floor. She opened her mouth as if to say something, then snapped it shut, turned and walked out of the room. There was a silence. Bub's chair creaked as he leaned back, shaking his head.
Good one, Nathan.
Chapter 8. Dinner was well and truly over after that. Simon got up to help Katie, the pair muttering to each other as the family dispersed. Nathan saw Simon whisper something to Katie and they both looked at him, then away.
Your mum's put Xander in your old room again, so I suppose it's up to you where you want to sleep, Harry said to Nathan as he got up to leave.
The staff block's empty, but the aircon's broken in there. The staff accommodation would be like being locked in a tin can. I'll take the couch. Nathan peered into the fridge in search of a beer. There's some in the cool room if they're not in there, Harry said. Shit. Nathan stood up and shut the fridge.
What?
Nothing, I just remembered something. Nathan's own cool room had been on the blink for a while, and after several weeks of waiting, the repair contractor was in the area. He'd been due finally at Nathan's place that day, Nathan remembered now as he pulled open the heavy door to the large family cool room built off the kitchen. The contractor would have let himself in, no problem with that, but Nathan had expected to be there. He'd try to call him. There was no problem with this cool room, at least, he thought as he walked in, goosebumps immediately rising on his skin.
He stood for a minute among the industrial quantities of frozen food, enjoying the temperature before extracting a beer from a tower of slabs. Back in the kitchen, he poked his head into the storeroom next door. It was well stocked, he was relieved to see. Not that he'd expected anything less, but if Cameron had been distracted, supplies weren't something you wanted to let slide. Much like Nathan's own storeroom at home, it was like walking into a corner store. The shelves groaned with months' worth of rice and pasta and cans. Lists were pinned to the wall, keeping track of how many of each item was in stock. Everything was in double figures. Nathan looked around and sipped his beer. He'd need to double-check his own stores were in shape if Harry was right about the flood. He should be all right, though. Like every other household in the region, Nathan placed his regular supermarket order in the nearest city, and every 6 weeks a huge refrigerated truck trundled the 1,000-kilometre road north from Adelaide with the whole town's orders. Plan ahead or pay the price. Nathan knew what he would be eating for every meal for the next 6 months. He always had enough to get through the floods, especially with it just being him. But if he was going to be trapped, he wanted to be prepared. He closed the storeroom door behind him, and out in the hall he picked up the landline and called the cool room contractor. Cameron's wallet was sitting on the hall table next to the phone, as he'd expected. He picked it up as the call went to voicemail and flicked through while he left a message. A couple of credit cards, some cash, one or two faded receipts from the service station in town. Nathan pulled out the driver's license and looked at his brother's photo. Cameron was not smiling, which was unusual, and he had instead assumed a dutifully neutral look. He still had a hint of humour around the eyes, though, and Nathan could imagine he'd just finished sharing a laugh with the photographer. Nathan snapped the wallet shut. He picked up his beer and wandered through to the lounge. The house barely changed from decade to decade. The couch was the same one they'd had since he was a kid, and he'd slept on it many times before. It wasn't bad. He saw that Liz had left some clean clothes folded for him and picked them up. They had to be Cameron's. Practicality always won out over sentimentality, but it still felt strange to be holding his dead brother's shirt and jeans. A plastic Christmas tree stood in the corner of the living room, its lights twinkling. There were already a few presents underneath. Nearby, in the centre of the wall and displayed in a heavy frame that Nathan knew had been expensive, hung Cameron's prize-winning painting of the Stockman's grave. It had been a while since Nathan had last seen it, and he leaned in to take a closer look. The image caught the grave at sunrise. Viewers sometimes mistook it for sunset, but Nathan knew from the position that it was morning, with beams of light refracting out from the horizon. Cameron had paid a lot of attention to the way the light played through the sky, with tiny brush strokes and a rich palette of colour that captured the detail. The grave itself was almost an afterthought by comparison. Its dark tones loomed in the bottom half of the painting, and its shape was implied rather than explicit. Even Nathan, who knew exactly bugger all about art, thought he could see why it was so popular. When it had won its prize, he'd read a couple of discussions and critiques online where people had attached all sorts of meaning to it. Light vanquishing darkness and vice versa. Loneliness, grief, rebirth. Someone had said they could see the hint of the Stockman standing in the muddy greys where the light met the dark. Personally, Nathan had never liked the picture all that much. It was a pretty good painting, he could admit, but it didn't capture the landscape for him. The contrast between the dark and the light seemed a bit heavy-handed. Whenever he was out there, especially alone, it always felt much more fluid. Nathan flopped down on the couch and looked again at the pile of his brother's clothes. They were almost exactly the same as his own, not surprising given that everyone he knew shopped at the same place, but were a size or two smaller. Nathan and Cameron had been the same height since they were 17, but his brother had been, lean and athletic, when Nathan was more broad and solid. When Nathan had found himself alone, not the first time when Jackie had left, but the second time, the real time, he had passed long hours working out feverishly with a dented old weight set in one of his sheds. After a while, it had dawned on him that no one ever saw what he looked like, let alone cared. Overnight, he had stopped lifting weights and spent the hours instead lying on his couch drinking beer. But it was hard enough to get up every morning in the dark even without a hangover, and the physical work around the property demanded a certain level of strength and fitness, so he'd had to rein that in too.
He put down the beer and picked up the weights on and off, and had managed to land somewhere in the middle, but he'd never quite got back to what he was. Nathan looked down at his own shirt, still red with dust, as a shadow passed by the window. Ilsa. She was silhouetted in the twilight, reaching up to unpeg bedsheets from the washing line. They billowed and snapped around her in the wind as though someone was running through them. Nathan watched a moment more, then dropped his brother's shirt back on the couch and went outside to talk to his brother's wife. Ilsa's eyes went to the red dust on his clothes straight away. It seemed more obvious somehow out there in the open air than it had been in the kitchen. Nathan could see her considering its origin as her hand stilled on a peg. "They're going in the wash." She didn't say anything, just turned back to the sheets. "Listen, Ilsa. Sorry about that stupid Stockman story at dinner. I didn't mean to upset you." She pushed a sheet aside to look at him. "I'm not upset because of the story, Nathan." "No, suppose not." She stretched up to grab a pillowcase. They belonged to the girls, judging by the pattern. "Leave them," Nathan said. "You don't have to do that now."
"I do. They're Lowe's. They've been out here since yesterday."
"It's already too late then." The bed linen would have been dry 5 minutes after it was put out. The cotton was now covered in 2 days' worth of grit. "They'll have to get washed again anyway. Leave it for now."
"No."
"Then let me give you a hand." Ilsa opened her mouth as though to protest, then gave a defeated shrug.
"Thanks."
She twisted a peg in her fingers.
"Nathan, what do you think happened to Cam?"
He pulled a sheet off the line and didn't reply straight away.
"Did he get separated from his car by accident?"
She stared hard at the peg in her hands.
"Or did it look like he meant it?"
"I don't know."
"But you were out there. What did you see?"
"There was a cop from St. Helens. He could talk you through everything."
"I know that."
She stopped him.
"I'm asking you. Please."
He sighed. The sheets rustled around them as he told her what he could, seeing the small crease deepen between her eyes. She listened mostly without speaking, her eyes damp and her mouth tight. She interrupted only twice. First when he told her about the shallow hole at the base of the headstone, and again when he mentioned the water and supplies abandoned in the back of Cameron's four-wheel drive. She made him explain that again. It made no more sense the second time. He watched Ilsa as he spoke. It had been 10 years, but sometimes in the right light, she still looked like the girl he had met behind the bar that first night. He'd been different too then, back when he was a semi-regular at the town's lone pub, making the long drive a bit too often, if he was honest, when the sting of his divorce had still been pretty raw. His wife, ex-wife, the paperwork had finally come through, had driven away down the Ballymurra track a year earlier with 5-year-old Xander in tow and without a backwards glance. Without much intention of sticking to the child access arrangement they'd managed to agree on either, as it had turned out. Nathan had promised Xander that he would phone him in Brisbane every day, but the line rang out too many times to be a coincidence. When he did get through, Xander was called away before they'd had a proper chance to talk, leaving Nathan listening to the dial tone. Jackie had been impossible to pin down on the dates of her promised visit. Nathan had made himself give her long enough to settle into her new life and then even a bit longer, but he had walked into the Ballymurra pub that particular night having transferred an eye-watering sum to retain a family lawyer. The distance from his son made him feel sad, and the lawyer's fee had made him feel poor. And Nathan had turned up that night not expecting that to change. There was only so much benefit a man could realistically get from nursing a beer in an empty pub. Ilsa had been there. She was the only one behind the bar, and he was the only one in front of it. So she'd served him with a smile, and he had introduced himself. She sat across from him as they chatted. She'd been working in the pub for exactly 3 weeks and 1 day, she told him, having arrived in town with her backpack exactly 3 weeks and 2 days earlier. She was Dutch, originally, but had been studying environmental science in Canada, and she leaned across the bar as she taught him how to pronounce her name in a soft, melodic accent. eel, sir. He'd tried and she'd smiled. Close enough. He'd kept trying until he got it right. Her parents were divorced and her mum had died a year earlier from breast cancer. She had stopped talking and looked down at the bar for a very long time. And eventually Nathan had tentatively reached out and put a hand on her arm. She had smiled then, and he felt something dislodge inside him. Anyway, she had said, still smiling, that had given her the motivation to finally go travelling, have an adventure and see the world a bit. What do you think of the outback? He had asked, and she'd laughed. It's cool. It's like the edge of the earth. He bought them both a drink, and they'd sat together in the empty bar as he'd filled her in on the local gossip. He'd had his acoustic guitar in his car and, he cringed at this later, he'd fetched it and played for her. But they had laughed as he played Australian songs she'd never come across and she called out requests for Dutch songs he'd never heard of. So what else do people do for fun around here? She'd asked eventually, in a way that reminded him a bit of how Jackie had used to speak to him, back in the early days when things were still good. Apart from come here, Nathan had said. Let me think. Sometimes people enjoy punching on. She'd rolled her eyes. It's true, don't underestimate it. A couple of cousins from Atherton brawled in the street for 4 hours last year. People brought out chairs and watched. 4 hours? She had laughed. If that's true, and I don't believe it is, by the way, they're either really good at fighting or really bad at it. He had grinned back. There are other things that people sometimes did for fun out there. Like drive up on the sand dunes to watch the sunset over the desert with a bottle of wine. That could be a lot of fun with the right person. He had looked at her and had been pretty sure from the slight tilt of her head and the smile on her lips that her answer to the invitation would be yes. It didn't have to be a big deal. God knew he was never planning to get married again. But he was officially free and single now. And it was only a drive out to the dunes with a backpacker. There was a hell of a long way from that to a ring on anyone's finger. But the bitterness had slid in without him even realising it. It wasn't so far from a ring to a four-figure invoice from the lawyers. So Nathan had shut his mouth again and let the moment drift past. Instead, they'd had another drink and a few more laughs, and at the end of the night, when she was closing up, they had stood facing each other in the doorway, both suddenly a little awkward, and he'd asked when she was working next week. He'd camped out in the back of his car like usual, with the stars shining through the dirty windscreen, and driven home with a grin on his face for the first time in a while. He'd gone back to the pub the next weekend, and the next. Not the one after that, though. By then, Nathan had found himself barred from the pub, the shop, and everything else worth visiting within a 6-hour radius. The length of his ban wasn't specified. Ongoing, he was told when he finally broke and asked. So far, it had been 9 years and 4 months and counting.
Did Cam leave a note on him?
Ilse asked from under the washing line, bringing him back to the present.
Or in his car?
No, Nathan said. Nothing here. She shook her head.
Was there anything in his pockets that might explain why he was there instead of Lehman's Hill?
No. What about on the radio? Did he call in at all?
I was in the office all day. Nothing came through. I would have heard.
Nathan pictured the large study with a desk-bound work that kept the property ticking over took place. It was a 7-day-a-week operation, ordering supplies, booking contractors, checking the payroll and supplier invoices. It had been Liz's job when Nathan was younger. Now it fell to Ilse. Barb and Harry both said Cam had seemed under a bit of pressure lately. He said.
What? Just lately?
Ilse sounded annoyed. Longer than that.
You know what it's like running this place. They know what it's like. There was always pressure on him, even when it's doing well.
She snatched a pillowcase from the line, folding it badly into a crumpled square. She took a breath and flapped it out, folding it more carefully this time.
I think there was something wrong, though. Harry's right. Cam was stressed and he was in a bad mood a lot of the time and he was distracted, which wasn't like him. I hoped it would pass, but it had been at least 6 weeks, maybe longer. It was getting worse, if anything.
Did you ask him why?
Of course I did.
She was instantly defensive. And he told me he was fine. There's always something that needs attention around here. Just because Cameron was working hard, that didn't mean... She stopped as they both sensed movement across the yard and turned to look. The light was fading now as they watched Bub walking near the furthest corner of the fence where the land rose higher. He stopped and looked down at a patch of earth. Even from that distance, Nathan knew where he was standing. Bub didn't look towards the washing line, and Nathan wasn't sure if he had seen them amid the sheets.
What's he doing over there?
Ilsa frowned.
God knows.
Bub was standing at the foot of their dad's grave, and overhead, Nathan could see the shape of the eucalyptus tree he had planted with his brothers after the funeral 20 years earlier. It had been a hot day and hard work, but it had been Liz's idea, so they'd done it, digging a hole at the head of the plot. The tree was a decent size now, and its branches swayed black against the sky. To the left of Carl Bright's grave was the ground earmarked for the rest of the family when their respective times came. The plot directly next to his dad's would probably have been Liz's under normal circumstances, but now, Nathan realised with a jolt, it would be Cameron's.
I need to get back inside.
Ilsa straightened suddenly. From her expression, he suspected she'd been thinking the same thing as him.
I want to check on the girls before the generator goes off.
The generator was switched off each night to save fuel and money, cutting the electricity and plunging the property into a complete blackout overnight. Nathan was used to it. He had started switching off his own for longer and longer these days, lying alone in the seamless dark from sunset to sunrise. Go. Nathan nodded at the washing line. I'll bring these in.
Thank you.
She seemed about to say something more, then changed her mind. A sheet blew in front of Nathan, hiding her from sight as she walked away, and he pushed it aside in time to see her disappear into the house. He turned back to the washing line. The white linen was a dull red-grey in the deepening gloom. Across the yard, Bub was still standing by the grave plots, only his back visible. Nathan reached up for the next sheet, then stopped as Bub took a final swig from the can in his hand, placed it on the ground, and dropped a hand to his fly. A second later came the unmistakable sound of a long stream of urine cascading onto the ground. Nathan stood completely still. The noise ran on, steady before at last trickling away to nothing. Finished, apparently, Bub zipped up and sauntered towards the house without glancing in Nathan's direction. A faint note in the air suggested he was whistling. Nathan didn't move until he was gone. The family plot was shadowy as he walked over, taking care where he put his feet in the growing dark. He looked at the ground where his dad was buried and where Cameron soon would be, then crouched and touched the soil with his fingertips. It was already dry. The thirsty earth had drunk in the moisture. It was impossible to tell which plot Bub had pissed on.
Chapter 9. It was still early, but Nathan could see the two little girls already out in the horse exercise yard, Cameron's daughters. He watched them for a minute before climbing into the passenger seat of Harry's four-wheel drive. Liz had lost the will or energy to protest, so Bub and Xander had both insisted on coming to meet the town sergeant out at Cameron's car. No one said it, but Nathan suspected everyone secretly hoped that Glenn McKenna would have a proper look and be able to tell them exactly what was what. Bub didn't speak to any of them as he climbed into the back seat next to Xander. Nathan had still been able to detect the faint whiff of urine when he'd left the graves the night before, but back at the house he'd found Bub already in his bedroom with the door shut. Nathan had been debating whether to knock when he'd heard Harry shout out the nightly warning call. The generator was going off. Nathan had lowered his hand. This was not a conversation to have in faceless pitch black. Instead, as the generator fell still and the property was plunged into darkness, he had lain on the couch rehearsing what he would say. By morning, though, he woke to find that his ideas had evaporated, and what he'd thought he'd seen suddenly seemed a lot less clear. Harry started the engine and set off down the driveway. As they passed the exercise yard, Nathan signalled. Pull over for a minute, Harry. The 8-year-old, Sophie, was in the middle of the yard, guiding a horse in a circle on a long lead with one hand. Her other arm was in a sling. Lo, now 5, was sitting by the fence, her head down as she drew something on a pad of paper. They were bigger than Nathan remembered, but then again it had been a year. Nathan could see Ilsa watching her daughters from the veranda. Cameron's dog, Duffy, sat listlessly at her feet. Hi, girls. Nathan leaned out of the window and waved to his nieces as Harry came to a stop. Didn't get a chance to say hello last night. How you going? And you remember Xander, don't you? Sophie tied up her horse, and the girls took their time walking over. Lo, in particular, looked at Nathan like he was a stranger. Come on, say good day to your uncle, Harry prompted when they stood unsmiling. Hi, Uncle Nathan, Sophie intoned. Lo, half a step behind her, didn't say anything. They looked a lot like Cam, especially around the eyes, Nathan thought. Their matching dirty blonde hair would probably go dark as they got older. Xander's had been the same. Nathan looked at Sophie's sling. It was made from colourful fabric with ponies printed on it. What happened to you? Fell off. Geez, you okay?
Small fracture.
Well, that's no good.
No.
Was that a mild hint of sarcasm? Nathan couldn't be sure. She seemed a bit young for that. Well, he said, be careful. I guess we'll see you later. The girls nodded, and after a glance towards Harry, ran back to the exercise yard. They seem a bit stunned by everything, Nathan said as Sophie picked up the horse's reins with a good hand. Her arm doesn't seem to have put her off, at least. Nah. Harry's eyes were on the driveway. Well, you know, Sophie. He didn't really, Nathan thought as they pulled away. They passed Ilsa, and she raised her hand in a wave. They drove in silence while the homestead fell behind them. Harry took the road route rather than cutting across the paddocks, and Nathan could hear the stones pinging off the bodywork louder and more frequently than yesterday. Harry drove faster than Nathan tended to, but then again, most people did. Nathan had been barely 21 when his dad had had the crash. He'd been practically living with Jackie by then at her suggestion in the same house he now called home. It had felt very different then. The novelty still shiny and new and the sex still on tap. Jackie was good to look at, and even better in bed, and for a long time he'd loved her for it. Cameron had been away studying an agribusiness course, and Bub was still a little kid. It had been the completely unremarkable nature of the accident that had shaken Nathan as much as anything. Carl and Liz Bright had been driving back from town like they had 100 times. A cow had stepped onto the track, and Carl had swerved, like he'd also done 100 times. This time, though, he'd been too slow, or the car had been moving too fast, or he'd been too sharp with the wheel, or not sharp enough, and he'd clipped it. The car had rolled and come to rest upside down. Carl had been pinned between the steering wheel and the roof. Liz was knocked unconscious and had woken up in the dark to find herself bleeding from the head and her husband bleeding to death. She'd used the radio to call for help. It had taken 40 minutes for the first person to arrive and another 30 for the ambulance. Roughly 4 hours had elapsed from the time of the accident to either of them receiving basic medical attention. Not one other car had passed by in all that time. Nathan had been asleep with Jackie when the call had come through. She'd made the right sympathetic noises as he'd pulled on his shirt and shoes, while also managing to convey on some level that she was a little pissed off he was leaving her in the middle of the night for a drama involving his own family. It was funny how high and bright the red flags flew in hindsight, Nathan often thought. Liz was already in the back of the ambulance when he'd finally arrived. A younger Steve Fitzgerald had been on duty and had taken Nathan aside to explain the situation. Carl was still pinned, but there was no urgency to free him. He was well and truly dead, but it hadn't been quick and wouldn't have been painless, Nathan had later overheard Steve whisper on the radio to dispatch. The bloke might have had a chance if someone had come by to raise the alarm sooner. Inside the ambulance, with a blanket around her shoulders despite the heat of the night, Liz was almost unrecognisable under the crust of blackened blood. She was lucky, Steve had said. She'll heal. Nathan had looked at his mum dazed and battered and thought she looked far from lucky. Then he had looked inside the twisted metal wreck of the car, and from that day forward had driven a few kilometres per hour slower than was strictly necessary. Nathan heard Harry grunt and looked over. The man's face hadn't changed. You right?
Yeah, Harry said. I was just thinking about that time you and Cam ran away to the Stockman's grave when you were kids. Remember?
Yeah, of course. Xander leaned forward.
What was that?
Harry looked at him in the mirror.
You never heard this story?
Xander shook his head. Harry glanced at Nathan, who shrugged.
I wasn't going to tell him, was I? It was a bloody stupid thing to do.
Yeah, it was,
Harry said. But you're only kids. What were you, 12?
11. Cam was 9. Nathan felt his insides twist at the memory of his brother, his dusty legs sticking out from below a loaded backpack.
Why were you running away?
Xander said.
God knows, can't remember.
Nathan lied. He could feel Xander watching him and Bub too now. And for the record, we weren't running away to the Stockman's grave. It was a pit stop on the way to town. They'd stuffed their backpacks, ridden out well before dawn. Nathan wasn't sure what they'd thought was waiting for them in town. Something better. But they'd had a plan, he knew. They'd discussed it at length and he could still remember some of the details now. He just didn't want to talk about it.
So what happened? Xander asked.
Well, they didn't get very far for starters, Harry said.
Then Dad worked out what they were planning about 5 minutes after we discovered they left. We drove out here, parked by the grave and waited for him to come over the far crest.
He looked at Nathan. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
The feeling of seeing the two men waiting there.
What happened when you found him?
Xander said.
We picked him up and drove him back home,
Harry said.
Held the horse's reins out of the window, let him gallop along beside.
Was Dad angry?
Bub's voice came from the back. It was the first time he'd spoken since they'd set off.
Yeah.
Nathan didn't turn to look at him.
Yeah,
he was.
I'll bet he was.
The atmosphere in the car felt heavier and they fell silent. Nathan could see the rocky outcrop stretching ahead. Not far to go now. It hadn't seemed like it at the time, but it was for the best that he and Cam had been found and picked up, Nathan thought. They'd have been lucky to last until morning at that time of year, even with supplies. Danger season. He knew now how stupid it had been. The rules of the outback may seem brutal, but they were written in blood. Just ask Cameron. Nathan was jolted from this train of thought as his head jerked forward a little. Harry tapped the brakes as Nathan heard Bub call from the back.
Right turn here!
Nathan looked up at the rocks and the almost invisible gap leading through. They were there. He heard Xander shift in the back and glanced at him in the side mirror. His son was looking at Harry with a strange expression on his face. The police vehicle came into sight first, parked at the bottom of the slope. Cameron's car was still waiting at the top, exactly where they had left it. Sergeant Glenn McKenna.